This podcast is brought to you by WCR FM in Wolverhampton.
Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen podcast, brought to you in partnership with WCR FM, Wolverhampton's local radio station, which you can hear in the city on 101.8 FM and DAB and everywhere else on WCRFM.com. Now, a groundbreaking new toolkit to make domestic abuse refuges more accessible for blind and partially sighted people has been launched by Beacon Vision, one of the great charities in Wolverhampton. They've worked together with the domestic abuse specialist charity CHAD in order to bring out this toolkit. I had the privilege of catching up with Lisa Cowley, who's the chief executive of Beacon Vision, on my Sunday chat show, Chris Allen in Conversation.
I'm glad to say Lisa Cowley, chief executive of Beacon Vision, is here, and we're going to talk about a new toolkit that's been launched to make domestic abuse refuges more accessible for visually impaired people. And I have to be honest here, Lisa, I've done lots of stuff around domestic abuse, and it never crossed my mind that this again would be an issue. But it obviously is something you'd be aware of every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So Five Sight and Vision Foundation did some research about 18 months ago, and it was identified. So it is known that you're three times more likely to be a victim of abuse if you've got a disability. And specifically, they saw increased levels. So if you've got visual impairment, they think a low estimate would be 1 in 12. So nice. In Wolverhampton, that could be approaching 1,000 people with sight loss that would be a victim of domestic abuse. And I think some of the things that we found through some of the work we did on the programme and talking to victims was that actually it wasn't just some of the things that you might think of as kind of some of the classic things, so either physical abuse or emotional abuse, but financial abuse, because you would need somebody to support you with accessing things, taking away people's independence. We had people where they were taking away their accessibility aids, taking away their cane, stopping them from being able to access things, taking away their phone, moving furniture around in the house. Equally, people said that they were less likely to be believed. So actually, if you've got sight loss, you are more likely to bump into things, you are more likely to spill things. So that element that it was less likely to be believed, and equally, it was very difficult for people to tell anyone, because actually when they were going to medical appointments or doctor's appointments, their carer would be with them.
Yeah.
And there was never that point where they were kind of really able to say, well, I want to be on my own, without it potentially causing an issue.
It's not like you can pop down to Morrison's or wherever. There's some place where you can say the key words now. Absolutely. All those different ways by which we're trying to make possible for people who are being abused to escape, they're all cut off.
And as well, obviously, the feedback was that refugees, real challenges in terms of accessibility. So obviously, by their nature, you're trying to mean that they can't be found, that they're a quiet place, they're often in hidden locations, they haven't got big signage. But from a sight loss perspective, that meant that people couldn't access them. And some of the people we spoke to were waiting 2 years for a refuge space, because actually a lot of people are going, well, how on earth would we support someone with sight loss? And what we're saying is actually, you're the specialist in domestic abuse. The specialists like Beacon across the UK in terms of sight loss, how do we work together? So we work with CHAD, which is a housing association that specialises in domestic abuse based in Dudley. We did a series of cross trainings. So our staff were trained in domestic abuse awareness and their staff were trained in sight loss awareness, which resulted in them changing a number of their processes and putting our toolkit together. And a lot of it is really simple stuff, and actually also just meaning that those refugees can create that connection. So this has been sent out across England. The toolkit's got loads of really useful information in, but we've also sent it out to sight loss organisations so they can send it out with their local contact details to their local refugees. So those refugees can think, oh, actually, we've got an organisation we can go to for support and help and guidance to make sure that we can support these individuals to come into the refuge and obviously to be safe.
Any feedback thus far from places as well? Because I'm sitting here almost, you know, you talked about things there that are done to abuse people, you know, which you just have this sense of horror.
Feedback we had as well was that there was more sympathy for the perpetrators, because actually, oh, it must be so difficult for you caring for this person and doing all of these things to this person. And it's understandable that sometimes you might
move the furniture around.
Yeah. And things like, you know, swapping the putting salt in the sugar jar and then saying, oh, you're so stupid, you've put salt in the coffee, or, you know, moving things around so they can't find what it is, or, you know, moving the orange juice for the milk and things. So then actually we were talking before about people's confidence. You're just degrading that confidence.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's much easier to isolate someone with sight loss than somebody with sight. You know, so I think it is. It's a really horrible thing in any circumstance, but I think where it's a disability and where it's sight loss, it's even worse, isn't it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I was thinking also about, you know, the different ways by which people can, you know, alert the circumstances they're in. But actually, if you've got a 2-year waiting list or something like that, that emergency call you need to make, you know, where you can just ring 999 and not say anything, and then the signal is there that it's actually an incident that's going on here. If there's nowhere to go that can cope with you, then you end up back home again, don't you?
You do, absolutely. And there's individuals that we've worked with through this programme who have ended up going back multiple times because the situation where they're in a refuge, which is not accessible or is potentially very far away, can it be even worse for them in terms of that circumstance? And I think a lot of what we wanted to do with this toolkit was learn from each other, learn from different organisations, so that actually if we had a disclosure to us as a sight loss organisation, we'd know exactly what to do and we'd know where to go to support. And we actually have done that. So we've had individuals who's disclosed that they're being a victim, and we've been able to work really close with Chad to get them the support, get them out of where they are, and do that within a safe way. We've equally so looked at how we make refuges accessible, and there's been changes made at Chad, and a number of other refuges are looking at it, but also looking at there are circumstances where an individual's own home can be made safe. So actually where someone's a victim, they can identify that it's more suitable for them to stay within their own home, but there can be adaptations to that house to make it secure and make it safe. So again, we've had conversations around what would that look like and how could you do that.
So how do you do that? Because in a sense, if the abuser is there, you know,
So this can be when the abuser's been moved out of the home by, and then actually that person might have very close relationships within that area, or often that there is potentially other access needs of either them or children or members of the family. So in terms of increased security, cameras, it being flagged as a location from a police point of view, in certain circumstances there can even be safe rooms put in. Obviously, ideally you want someone to be moved out of that location, but I think as well there's that feedback, why should it be me? I'm the victim. So why should it be me that has to be moved out of my community, moved out of my home? All of this has changed. And especially for individuals with sight loss, depending on their condition, depending on when how much loss sight they've lost, you know, they've mapped that location. They know their own home. To go and then have to move potentially multiple times, because obviously a refuge is a temporary accommodation option, is extremely stressful for individuals.
It is indeed. And in terms of equality and diversity, are these kind of issues now being taken on by people to see this as a key area?
Absolutely. So obviously, at the moment, it's about 20% of domestic abuse professionals have had specialist training in visual impairment. So we're working with Chad. The team are actually presenting at a national conference next week around the toolkit and the work that's been done. We've obviously shared the training resource in terms of us doing it, and have worked with other sight loss organisations around how they can train individuals within their locality. We also work really closely with the police. So Beacon is a hate crime reporting centre. So there's a number of those where individuals can go and report hate crime, actually looking at how can trusted community locations be places where people can go and ask for support and report things. We've also been talking to healthcare professionals, so talking to the eye centres within the Black Country around are you aware that this is an increased risk, and what would you do in terms of that? So there is a lot of training within the NHS and health services around domestic abuse, but actually how are they then targeting that around specific specialisms where it might be seen more often? I think one of the things that Fight for Sight and Vision Foundation have been looking at is that you are certain ethnic communities are more predisposed to certain issues with sight loss, and there's also some higher levels of domestic abuse within certain ethnic communities. So actually, what can we do specifically around there? So I think that's an area we'd like to try and explore further, as Fight for Sight and Vision Foundation are doing on a national level.
part of what's going through my head here, because this is pioneering, is where did you find the time to do all this? But you obviously saw it was such an important development that you find the time for something important. And obviously, are you getting financial support to develop this toolkit as well, so that it's being rolled out?
Yes, so we had funding from Fight for Sight Vision Foundation. They provided financial support for it. And I think for us, you know, I'm incredibly lucky that I've got a fabulous team that I work with, and we've got fabulous partners. And I think when the research was originally produced, I'd shared it with Chad and said, look, this has come out, this is really interesting, and Anna, who's the chief exec there, we'd been like, what are we going to do? There's got to be an opportunity to do something more. So we were delighted when the opportunity came out to apply for some funding, which provided that additional staff capacity.
And are you the first in the country to be moving this forward, from what you're saying?
Yeah, so we're the first to create a toolkit. We're the first to kind of try this work in terms of developing these partnership approaches. And I think for us, it's about going, actually, it's not that difficult. It's about relationships and it's about information. But actually, everyone's, like you were saying, everyone's so busy. There's so much pressure. But now the toolkit's there, it's ready-made, isn't it, for people to take it forward?
It is indeed. And it's on your website, beaconvision.org/domestic-violence-toolkit. People can find out more information there about it. And obviously, we're thinking here about refuges. But also, there's things that are applicable here to every workplace.
Absolutely. And I think, again, it's just those things we say, actually, if somebody's got any level of disability, it's having those conversations, because actually we're not one person at work and one person at home, are we? So having those conversations, employers are often a point where people will disclose concerns that they've got on a whole range of things. And we're always happy to support. So we get contacted by individuals, by family members, by employers, by healthcare professionals all the time. Just give us a ring, contact the team, and they're happy to provide generic and specific support.
That's Lisa Cowley, who is the Chief Executive of Beacon Vision. If you want to know more information about this toolkit, then do look in the show notes. I look forward to you joining me next time on the Chris Allen Podcast here on WCRFM.
For more information about WCR podcasts, go to wcrfm.com/podcasts.